One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Bakes fires Butler. He can tie for the lead. Loose and Horford.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show. I'm Dave DeFore here with Keith Parrish for your Eastern Conference Finals Game 7 update. Before we start, don't forget you can get this podcast without ads by subscribing at theathletic.com/NBA Show. Celtics, Heat, Game 7 in Miami, and it wasn't a blowout, Keith.
It wasn't a blowout. No, we got a good game. I mean, I think you can make arguments about what was wrong with this game. Perhaps it wasn't aesthetically pleasing at all times. Perhaps there was too much depending on the referees to make calls. There was too much of diving and physicality and maybe uncalled things. Maybe there was a couple of weird replay reviews. But for me, this was art. This was amazing. It was a wire-to-wire victory for the Boston Celtics. Two teams I don't have a rooting interest for, and I was almost nauseous. I was so nervous in the final couple minutes.
It's a wire-to-wire victory for Boston, and they win this game 100-96, so only a four-point win. And it was a roller coaster, Keith. Boston was up 17 at one point in this game. And we're going to skip straight to the end. And we'll circle back like we always do. But they're up 11 points with about 3.5 to go. And all of a sudden, Boston just stops playing offense. I have no idea what was happening with them. But Miami put their foot on the gas for the last 3 minutes, going on an 11-0 run. Boston almost fumbled the game away.
It was so exciting. I was like making little markers. You know, like there was all these moments where it's like, you had Jason Tatum hit this huge three-pointer and it put him up 13. And then you had other opportunities where, like, you had Marcus Smart not grabbing the defensive rebound, like letting it go out of bounds, and Jimmy Butler saves it. I made a mental note. I'm like, all right, you're up 9 right there. Like, is that going to be a thing? And then you had all these different moments where the Heat just kept scoring. And like you said, the Celtics, yeah, they stopped playing offense, but it felt like throughout this entire series or these stretches, and both of these teams are really, really good at defense. And that was one of the reasons this series was kind of ugly at times, is because these teams are awesome at defense. And you saw the Celtics put these vice grips on the Heat where the Heat couldn't score in a couple of the games. But in this one, you had these moments where it's like, what are the Celtics doing? And part of it's like, all right, well, They're trying to bleed a few seconds here, and just those few seconds of not attacking makes it so much harder to get a good-looking shot. And you had guys who just, they weren't on their A game. Like Al Horford, the guy was excited. Every jumper he took would just flew out of his hand. Like Jaylen Brown had
Marcus
Smart
was awful in the first half of this game.
Right, you had a bunch of just, I think it was the nerves. It was the energy, the excitement. Like Jaylen Brown down the stretch, pretty bad, but it's like he did enough. And then we got to get this exciting final. I don't even want to talk about it. The Jimmy Butler shot.
All right, so let's jump to it then. Jimmy Butler has the ball down two. Miami's down two. He's got the ball in transition. He's pushing up the court. Al Horford on his heels. Al Horford drops to about the elbow and gives up an open transition three to Jimmy Butler, who, in my estimation, a little bit off balance, going a little too fast. I think the shot, he wasn't ready for the shot, Keith. I don't like the shot. Not when you're Jimmy Butler and you've been that good attacking the basket, and it's Al Horford.
In
transition, you like it.
It seemed like Jimmy Butler, yeah, probably could have gotten to the basket and tie the game. You tie the game with 15 seconds left. Jimmy Butler had played every second of the game. Like, this guy's been amazing. I mean, like, he forced this game 7 with his game 6 performance. Just an absolute incredible 47-point performance in game 6. And this one, he's giving you 35 points. I do like this shot. I like the shot going for the lead. I know Jimmy Butler is not known as a great three-point shooter. Oh, but last game, he had 4 of them. Like, this guy is just a playoff performer. He's a clutch performer. He had the opportunity to give his team the lead. I don't know if they get a better look than that to take the lead. If he goes to the bucket, you know, maybe he scores, I don't know, 60% of the time, 70% of the time. But then you have a tie ball game. Then it's the Celtics have the ball. They have a chance to win. So, like, for me, I don't know if the math checks out. We can check with your nerder buddy, Seth Partnow. Tell me if my math is right here. In my mind, the idea to get the lead there with an open, a wide-open three-pointer, we don't know if we can get a better wide-open look at that. I like the idea of going for the lead. There's still 15 seconds left or 16 seconds left. You know, the Celtics might try to score quickly. You might get the ball back again. So, maybe just me as a sports fan, I like Jimmy Butler. You know, this has been a hard-fought game. This game hit the under, by the way. It's been a hard-fought series where no one can score. He has a wide-open look. He's feeling good. He says, you know what? I'm going to go for this kill shot right here. We're on this awesome 11-0 run. Yeah, he misses it. Retrospect, you're saying, oh, maybe he should take him to the basket. And I totally respect that and understand that, but personally, I liked it. I like the idea of, like, let's get the lead right here, tying the game. Who knows what's going to happen? If I have a chance, I'm Jimmy Butler. I'm going to make this shot. I'm going for it.
And I can think it's a bad shot and still respect it. This is where I'm at, right? Like, all right, that's not my choice, but that being said, it's Jimmy Butler, who has proven time and time again, even in this series, that he steps up when the moment calls for it. And I want to start here with Jimmy Butler. You mentioned 35 points. They're only here because of what he did in game six. Really, this is a seven-game series because of four Jimmy Butler games. And I'm going to count this one as one of them because this game wouldn't be close. Boston was up 17, and Jimmy Butler was the reason that it was only 17. No one was giving him any help. And, you know, Rob Williams has done a great job when he's been available in this series on Bam Adebayo. He looked really rough in this game, so you got kind of a good Bam Adebayo performance. You got 25 points and 11 rebounds, so Jimmy got a little bit more help, but still just not enough. And that's been the story for the Miami Heat all playoffs. Kyle Lowry, that injury clearly has hampered him. All he's able to do is go out there and try to draw charges and flop into timeouts. And I mean, it was an uphill climb for Jimmy Butler anyway. And to put this kind of performance together in a game seven, I think this is like a classic superstar series from Jimmy Butler, even though he lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird series. I don't know what other word to use for it, because you had those three games where Jimmy Butler was 10 for 40 combined in games 3, 4, and 5, and then all of a sudden, game 6 and 7, he's like, oh, he's amazing Jimmy Butler again. He's arguably put in you know, a bunch of the best individual performances in the entire playoffs. Like, he has multiple of them by himself. And yeah, he didn't get the help. Like, Adebayo had a nice game, but Adebayo also missed a lot of good scoring chances. The Celtics were maybe a little bit vulnerable with that, like, little floater range, that 8-foot range. And it seemed like he had so many of those shots that weren't even close. He was struggling to finish. And then just the injuries, like the pile of injuries for both teams. Like, Robert Williams was barely moving out there. Tyler Herro wasn't 100%. He gave it 7 minutes, but he wasn't effective, so they couldn't really play him. You know, the Heat were just trying to figure some stuff out. They had Jimmy Butler. They had Kyle Lowry, you know, doing his thing, but, like, not at 100%, not at the top of his game. And then it's like they were kind of searching. Like, Oladipo was the guy they rolled with most of the game. They did these Gabe Vincent, Oladipo, Kyle Lowry minutes a lot, which they hadn't been doing before. I don't believe they did that at all before game six. And so, you know, Spoelstra was just trying stuff, and it seemed like the Heat, it wasn't going to be enough until the last 2-3 minutes, where it felt like, you know what, maybe the Celtics aren't going to make the finals. It felt like they don't want it. Maybe they're just done.
I really thought this was just another classic fake NBA comeback. It really felt like it the entire time. And maybe that speaks to how, you know, how low I think about the rest of the Heat roster outside of Jimmy Butler, to be frank. And when you watch this series and you see that basically it was a Jimmy Butler show, maybe I was right for that. Well, let's talk about Boston a little bit, because there were two teams here. And Jason Tatum led the way, 26 points, but not a great shooting performance, 9 of 21 from the field. Jason Tatum also was named the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, and it was not unanimous because Jimmy Butler got a vote, which I agree with. I don't hate it.
Yeah, I think it's a totally fair vote. Tim Bontemp said, you know, he put his vote for Jimmy Butler, which it makes sense. You know, Tatum, like, a little bit up and down, but, like, I thought his performance tonight was everything it needed to be. Like, 9 for 21, not the most efficient, but for the rock fight that this series has been, like, I give him a lot of credit, and he had some just huge buckets. Multiple times where it felt like, all right, the Celtics are bogging down again. Some of the guys, we can't really trust them to score. It's going to need to be the superstars who step up and do it, and he made those big shots. But also Marcus Smart, who battled injury. Like, he had the two big free throws at the end. Him coming up with 24 points in this one, also 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Like, it was a really big game for Marcus Smart.
And, well, this was probably the first time all series, off the top of my head, that I can remember Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum all were mostly effective in the same game. I mean, shooting numbers aside, and especially with Marcus Smart, he was taking some really awful three-point looks, early shot clock in the first half, kind of going for the knockout punch when Boston had that big lead. You throw that out, those three guys having a good game all in one game happened to happen on the right night, because Al Horford wasn't very good and Robert Williams wasn't very good. They needed those three guys especially. But Jaylen Brown, it just seems like when Tatum couldn't get it going, Jaylen Brown takes the ball and makes something happen.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son Evan continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Marcus, after not getting it done, game 6, how sweet is it to get it done on the road?
It's amazing. Obviously, we would like to have got it done in front of our crowd, but it's come here against this team, this organization, the way that they play, the way that they leave it all on the court, it's only right. This is amazing. We finally got over the hump.
So looking ahead, Keith, Celtics Warriors is kind of what we've been sort of expecting the last few weeks, I would say. Going into the playoffs, we had no idea what was going to happen. We didn't know if Steph Curry was going to be healthy. We thought Boston was going to be just world beaters. We didn't know what was happening. And now it feels like the tables are turned, and most people are probably going to favor the Warriors in the upcoming finals. Are you one of them?
I think if the few days off, the series doesn't start until Thursday. If the Celtics get a little bit healthier, if Robert Williams can get back to 100%, if I feel like the rest of the team, the Celtics are 100%, I might honestly lean the Celtics a little bit. But, like, these are two titanic squads, and I think it's really interesting. This Celtics team, in the regular season, from January 1st on, number one in net rating, number one in defense. And, like, I think sometimes we question that, but, like, I think in the postseason, we saw, like, this team is so good. They have so many great players. They're so amazing at defense. Like, they're legit. You know, they're clearly contenders. Now they made the NBA Finals. But it's interesting, up until January 1st, the first 2.5 months of the season, the Warriors were the best team in net rating and the best team in total defense. So, like, earlier in the year, we were like, wow, the Warriors look like themselves again, maybe the title favorites. And then, of course, the Suns took over the regular season. I thought going into the playoffs, the Suns were the team out of the West. But so, like, it does feel like a very, like, I don't know, worthy or just, like, conclusion of this season to have these two teams. There's a ton of awesome storylines, especially with the continuation of the Warriors dynasty, Steph, Draymond, and Klay getting back there. But, like, I lean Celtics, but I think, like, this is just going to be an amazing series. If the Warriors come out and if they're healthier and if, you know, like, if they take care of business in 5 or 6, I'm not going to be stunned. But I do feel like it probably 5, I guess, would surprise me. I feel like it's going to be 6 or 7, you know, no matter who wins. Like, what are you thinking right now? I mean, I will say I'm incredibly pleased by this matchup, because I think, again, these are two of the most worthy teams to match up. It really is a good representation of, like, these are probably the two best teams, period, for the whole year.
I think anytime you get the top two defenses in the finals, that's a big deal. The biggest question I have coming out of the conference finals from each respective team is, can the Warriors protect the basketball? And can the Celtics actually put the ball in the basket? And I know that the Warriors can defend the Celtics. I don't know that the Celtics can shut down the Warriors enough for their offense to keep up unless the Warriors are turning the ball over and Boston capitalizes in the way that they do. So if Boston can create turnovers, play make on defense, get those transition opportunities, Boston's going to be in good shape. But it depends on the Warriors. I think the Warriors are just going to win this thing. I think the Warriors right now are playing better basketball than anybody. And it could be five. I think the Warriors are just that good right now, and especially with how Steph is playing and how everyone's playing around him, it's impossible for me to bet against those guys.
Also, not just the way Steph's playing, the way Klay seems to fully be Klay again. You know, like if Klay is getting better and better, if he's peaking, that clearly favors the Warriors. They're also getting Gary Payton 2 back reportedly for the finals. That's going to be great to see. Yeah, it's going to be an awesome matchup of, again, like you said, the two best defenses from the regular season and two of the best teams clearly through the playoffs.
And plenty of layoff between this conference finals and game one. Game one is Thursday night. So that means Robert Williams gets a few days off. Game two is going to be Sunday. So if he's not right by Thursday, maybe he can be right by game two and we can actually get something resembling full strength from both teams. Because that's the only thing I really root for here, Keith, is I want to see these guys at their peak. Because coming into the playoffs, I mean, I thought Boston was playing better basketball than anybody in the league, and I really did think they were going to have a nice path to the finals. It's been attrition for them. They've had back-to-back seven-game series. This is not a well-rested team going in to face the Warriors, who, frankly, are looking pretty rested.
Right, right. The Warriors with a full week off. Yeah, like you say, after this grueling pace of every other day for so long, the finals do space out a little bit where you have a couple days off before it starts, then a couple days off in between the games. So hopefully we do get to see the best shot from both of the squads.
Well, that's going to do it for the show, folks. Don't forget, we're going to be on the ding on the Athletic NBA show after every game in the finals. So if there's seven games, we'll have seven dings recapping those games. It won't necessarily be me and Keith, but we will have a ding here on your Athletic NBA show feed. For Keith Parrish, I'm Dave DeFore. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the finals. Keith, let's get out of here.
Ding, ding.